Good morning, ladies. Well, it's great to see a room this full of women. It's wonderful. Hasn't this been a wonderful week? I know that all of you are dead tired and sleepy, but don't go to sleep yet. It's not over. I have a special person, some people that just came in. My granddaughter came up from White House. We don't get to see each other real often, with her children, and our niece, Nari, with her children, so this is a great event. I'm so glad to see all of you. Hasn't it been wonderful to visit with all of our friends from all over the country? We've heard some wonderful speeches, and they're great, but it's also really good to be with our friends that we don't get to see very often. So welcome to all of you. Am I talking too loud? Or see, I wear hearing aids, and it sounds awful to me. When I was asked to speak on this subject, I began to think, all the great women I've known for so many years, how in the world am I going to talk about all the great women that I know in 45 minutes? It's not possible. But the more I kept writing, the more women kept coming to mind, and I couldn't possibly include all of them. So if anybody feels left out, it's only because I didn't have enough room for you. As most of you know, I also have a vision problem, and the lighting right here is not real good. But what does the scripture say makes a great person? Do you remember when John and James and John's mother went to Jesus and said, I want my sons to have a higher place in the kingdom, and will you please give them special attention? What was his response? His reply was, whoever desires to be great among you, let him be your servant. Matthew 20:26. So, unselfish service to others is what is going to make us the kind of people that God wants us to be, the kind of women that God wants us to be. Now, we could study for hours, and I know all of you have, about women in the scriptures. We know many of them. All of them had faults, didn't they? Except one that we don't hear any faults about, and that's the mother of Jesus. And she's the only one from scriptures that I'm going to refer to. We don't really know a lot about her, do we? The Lord just said that she was chosen. And can you imagine? Just think about for a minute. Being the kind of woman that the Lord would choose you to carry his son, to be able to give birth to him, to cuddle him, to feed him, to teach him, to watch him grow, and maybe discipline him. I don't know. We don't know really what happened. The Lord doesn't tell us. But he was a little boy, and he probably needed to be disciplined occasionally. But what a privilege it was, but what a woman she must have been. When the angel approached her, let's see if I can see this well enough to read it. The angel said, rejoice highly, favored one, the Lord is with you. Blessed are you among women. We find that in Luke 1:28. And then, when Jesus was 12 years old, remember he went to the temple and was listening to the elders, and he was also asking questions. And Mary apparently was present because she, according to the scriptures, according to Luke 2:51, she kept all these sayings in her heart. And that is what will make us great women, if we keep his sayings in our heart. And the women that I want to talk to you about, now, there's no point in you taking your book out because I won't be following it. I couldn't if I tried, so I couldn't even see it. So the women that I have thought of that, to me, were great women kept his sayings in their heart. And that's what made them great. I had two or three mentioned in the book, but I'm not going to mention them. The first great woman in my life, of course, was my mother. I don't know if any of you hear it. Well, I do know one, at least one lady here that knew her. I don't know how many that knew my mother. She lived in Louisville, Kentucky. Her name was Elsie Shull, and she was truly a great woman. Mother was the kind that loved the Lord. She loved him before anything else, and that was the way she lived her life. She grew up in Kentucky in a very rural area where it was that we were poor as Job's turkey, as the saying goes. But Mother was always a good housekeeper and a very hard worker. She kept a spotless house, and I'll never know how. I never remember seeing our house dirty. And that my children couldn't say, I can tell you. And when she was about 16 years old, she carried the mail for her father, if you can imagine that these days. But she loved to read, and she read the Bible, and she carried the mail with a horse and buggy. That's a long time ago. And the horse knew where the mailboxes were, so the horse would stop at the mailbox while she read, and she'd put the mail in and go on. But she was a hard worker always. She married my father when she was 19, and my father was not a Christian. But because of her insistence upon never missing a service of worship and living the kind of life she did, he became a Christian when I was 7 years old. I remember distinctly the night he was baptized. It was a very cold night, and they practically had to break the ice to baptize him in the river, but I remember that distinctly. I remember she was so insistent upon never missing a service, and believe me, it wasn't easy to get there from where we lived. We had to ride in a wagon with horses pulling. It was cold sometimes, and sometimes the road was so bad the wagon would nearly turn over. But we didn't miss services. But one back in those days, we didn't have a telephone. And when somebody decided to visit you, they just came. Are any of you old enough to remember that? I'm probably the oldest one here. But some of you may remember it. They would just come. And I remember one Sunday morning, a whole wagon load of my father's family came to visit, and we missed church. And Mother was really upset. And she told my dad, she said, "I don't care how many of your family or anybody else comes, I'm not missing church again." And we didn't. Mother was good to teach. She taught me, and I'll always be grateful for the teaching that she gave me. And my brothers, I have two brothers, and she taught us. One of the things she taught me that I was so grateful for, and I hope you young ladies are doing the same with your girls, she taught me how to behave when I was old enough to date boys. She told me that my body was mine, and he was to keep hands off. And he was not hold my hands, okay, but nothing else. He was not to touch my legs. He wasn't to touch me anywhere in the private parts of my body. And that if he did, he didn't love me, and he didn't respect me. And I never forgot that, and it kept me from getting into some trouble that many other young ladies have gotten into. And I'll always appreciate that. I remembered it. Fortunately, I didn't have anybody that I dated was that kind of a guy, but if I had been, well, I did have a blind date with a guy one time that got his hand out of place, and I slapped him in the middle of a movie. But it was because of my mother's teaching, and I never would even speak to him again. But it was because of my mother's teaching that I knew how to behave, and I'm so grateful. And you young ladies that are bringing up your children, your little girls, teach them, and you can't start too young. Teach them your body is yours, and he's to keep his hands off until you get married. Then your body belongs to him. And that is quite a change, too, believe me. But I still am glad she taught me that. Mother taught me also the scriptures. We had a little Bible drill at services every week. And she would drill me on those scriptures that we were to learn. We were to memorize scriptures, and we memorized a lot of scriptures. We would sometimes memorize full script chapters, and which some of them I still remember. Not too many, but some of them I can remember. But while she was doing her work, which was so hard, she had to do her washing on a scrub board, and I think some of you maybe have seen those or used them maybe. I hope not, but I never had to. But she did, and her back would be breaking. But she would be helping me to remember those verses. She would be teaching me and listening, because she already knew them, and she knew whether I was saying them right or not. And that's how I learned to memorize passages. She was really, I appreciate that forever. Mother was very strict with us children. Now, my daddy wasn't much of a disciplinarian, but my mother was. You didn't get by with much with her. I never forgot that she was my mother. She was also my friend when I grew up. In fact, she was my best friend when I was in high school, and I always thought she was the most beautiful woman in the world. But when we were little, well, all of our lives, even when I was a teenager, I didn't dare talk back to her because I knew that was dangerous. But one time, a lesson that I remember, and I hope you young people will teach your children this lesson. I was at a neighbor's house playing with my friend Ruby, and I found a penny. Well, a penny in those days was, you could buy a lot of candy with a penny. So I came home with it clutched in my hot little hand. And you know how guilty children can look when they're guilty? Of course, I probably looked as guilty as sin. And she said, "What do you have in your hand?" And I showed her a penny. She said, "Where'd you find that? Or where'd you get that?" I said, "I found it." She said, "Where did you find it?" I said, "In Ruby's yard." She said, "Then it's not yours." I said, "But I found it." She said, "If it's not yours, no matter where you found it, it's not yours. And when you take something that's not yours, it's stealing." And she marched me back to their house, which was about, I think about a mile, maybe a half. It seemed a long way. But it was a half a mile to a mile in country road, a country. And she switched my legs good all the way. I knew that you don't take something that doesn't belong to you. I tried to teach my children that, and I hope the rest of you, there's a lot of young mothers in this room, and I'm so glad you're here. Teach your children young. If it's not yours, don't take it. It's stealing. And they need to know that word. It's stealing. So I appreciated that from her. I didn't at the time, mind you. Mother also loved, or she loved good gospel preaching. She loved preachers, and she supported them in every way she could. She supported them financially when she was older and had the money to do it. But she supported them. Connie used to tease her and say that he needed her, I've forgotten what he called it, buttering up. He needed her some butter. But she just loved good preaching. Greg Lipner was preaching. I think they've gone now. I was hoping Vicki could be here. But Greg was preaching at Expressway there in Louisville when she got older. And she loved Greg, and Greg loved her. They were just really good buddies. And she went with him nearly every week. She was in her 80s, probably around 85, something like that. Well, in her late 80s. They'd go visit the old people. And they visited the nursing homes, and they would visit the shut-ins. And they did this nearly every week. I think she went the week before she died. And Greg loved her. It was a mutual feeling between the two of them. In fact, there's a poem here. It's in the book, but I'm going to read it to you. That Greg is quite a poet, by the way. And by the way, he wrote the book, That Ye May Grow Thereby. I hope all of you will get a copy of that and read it. It's so good. I read it. Of course, I didn't know that he had a poem about my mother in the book until after I got the book. And it's still hard for me to read this, but I'm going to read it. You probably didn't, Elsie Shull is the name of the poem. You probably didn't know her. Her name was Elsie Shull, and of all the sisters I have loved and lost, I think I miss her most of all. Elsie was in her 80s. She had her hair was white, but she was ramrod straight. She really wasn't all that straight. Come on, Greg, there's work to do. Time's a wasting, and we can't be late. She could read me like a book. She knew how I was feeling somehow. With a simple word, she could wipe away the tears. Oh, Elsie, I need you now. I have trouble with this. Maybe soon the Lord will return, and you and I will reunite, and at once again embrace. I have done all that I know to do, and now I long to see your face. And that's hard for me to read. But I'm so grateful that he wrote that. He also wrote a poem when she died. In December of January and December of 1997, she baked 7 Italian cream cakes. I don't know if you've baked one. I tried one after she died, and I said, forget it, it's too much work. They're absolutely delicious, but they take you all day to bake, and she baked 7 that week, that right before Christmas, and gave them as gifts to different people. So I said, Mother, why are you working so hard like that? Why don't? Because she would have to stop between cakes and lie down, and because her back hurts so bad. She said, well, I don't have much time left. I've got to get this done. And she did. I had one great regret. She always wanted me to be with her when she was sick. She was never sick much, for which I'm grateful. But we were in South Africa preaching and teaching when she died. And I so much regret not being there to hold her hand and say goodbye to her. But I'm so grateful that God gave me a mother who kept his sayings in her heart. Now I'm going to, if I can get my eyes cleared up where I can read, I'm going to talk about a lady named Mosella Stotesbury. Now I know I was supposed to talk to you about people that I know. I really didn't know her. I know her through the memories of Connie and his mother. She would have been Sharon, my granddaughter. She would have been her great-great-grandmother. And the things that they've told me about her, Connie's mother looks so much like her so that I can imagine that she was a lot like her. But she lived in North Carolina. They were very, very poor. She had 4 children. They lived on a farm, and her husband died. And she, at the day of the funeral, nobody came with her or brought any food. I guess it wasn't a custom at that time, but she had to go home after the funeral and fixed dinner for her four children. She worked in the fields to support her children. She worked for other people, and Connie's mother, who was the oldest child, took care of the little ones. She wasn't very old, but she took care of the little ones. So Grandmammy was what she was called. Everybody loved her and called her Grandmammy. She finally moved to Hopewell, Virginia, where she ran a boarding house. She worked very hard there, too. They were members of the Christian church, but she had studied the Bible. And when they finally were able to hear, she lived with Connie's parents in her older years, and when they had the opportunity to hear the gospel preached, she knew immediately. She said every word of what the preacher said was truth. And they all became New Testament Christians. I have to read something to you. That she had a great sense of humor from what they said. They've told me so many things about her that she said and she did, but I have to read one thing that I thought was extremely funny. And it epitomizes her whole attitude about serving the Lord and what we should do as women. I'm going to read this to you. A neighbor came to visit and started to tell some as they called it, gossip, and I'm sure it probably was. Grandmammy said, "Now hold on there. If everybody who totes news had their tongue pulled out about a yard and had a slit cut in it and their leg pulled up through it, there would be a lot more people going humpback than there are now." That was her type of humor. But the gossip ended right then. Wouldn't we be wise if we used those kinds of things to stop gossip instead of listening to it or maybe joining in? But that was the kind of a lady she was. She taught Connie how to fish and how to hunt. She taught him how to play games that he still loves. She taught him how to work puzzles, which he loves. But most of all, she taught him the Bible. And I had the feeling he was kind of her favorite, but I know she was definitely his. But in the evenings, he would go to her room at night, and she would say, after they'd played some games, she'd say, "Son, get the book." And then she would read to him from the Bible. And then when he got older, he would read to her. But they had such a close relationship, and she encouraged him to preach. She said, "Son, if you're going to preach, you better preach it right." So he got a lot of his training, actually, from his grandmammy. She kept his sayings in her heart, which I think made her a great lady. Even though I never met her, I feel like I knew her. Then I want to talk to you about Connie's mother. I did know her, and she was truly a great lady. I don't suppose I called her Mama. We all called her Mama. I don't suppose she ever taught a Bible class because she felt very insecure about teaching. She felt that she didn't have enough education, but she taught. She had three children, Wiley, who is still preaching the gospel. Connie has preached all of his life. Her daughter, Glenda, married a preacher, and he preached until he died at the age of 49. I'll have to read this because I can't ever remember how many kids. She has three grandsons and one grandson-in-law and two great-grandsons who are preaching. So she left a pretty good legacy. She also did teaching of the young ladies in the church there in Hopewell, Virginia, who would come and just sit with her and talk with her and ask her, "How did you do this? How did you raise godly children, men who loved the Lord and wanted to preach?" And she was always happy to talk to them. She also had a great sense of humor. and I loved her dearly. I was able to go and spend a month with her and take care of her before she died with cancer. I thought that was a great privilege. They never felt like they had a lot, and they didn't have a lot. But she always opened her home to anybody who came through town, strangers, visitors, and of course always had the preachers, and loved to have it so. Her home was always open. And when Connie's dad became ill, his mind became disturbed, and he got so he had to be bedfast. The doctor told her, said, now you can't take care of him at home. You'll have to put him in a nursing home. She said, you just watch me. And she did it. She took care of him with the help of her sister-in-law who lived with them. They took care of him till he died. So we can do what we determine to do. But she kept his savings in her heart. And I think she was a great lady. The next one I'd like to talk to you about is Beulah Adams. She was Connie's aunt. Most of the family called her Booby because the babies couldn't say Beulah. She was Booby. I called her Aunt Beulah. I just could not call her Booby. But I loved her dearly. She was one of the dearest. She was probably the greatest servant of people that I have ever known. Her mother died when she was a very small child. And back in those days, they just kind of passed. There were several children. They just kind of passed them from one relative to the other to take care of. And she said she knew none of them wanted her. She said she sometimes heard them discussing whose turn it is now. What's your turn? No, it's your turn. It's not my turn. Can you imagine how terrible that would make you feel as a small child? Nobody wanted her. It always made my heart ache when she would talk. She told me about quite a bit of that. She also was dreadfully afraid of men. And I had the terrible feeling, she never told me this, but I had the terrible feeling that she had to be abused by someone, and probably a relative. But she was just deathly afraid of men, so she never married. So she worked for family and friends, never made much money. She would just go and take care of the sick, whoever happened to be sick, whoever was having a baby, she'd go take care of them. So she never had much money. She didn't have hardly any income when she got old. She lived with Connie's family all her life. She only had a really small income from the government when she was old. And I dearly loved to take her shopping or take her to get a permanent, because the only time she ever had a permanent was when I went to and took her. And she was like a child. She was so grateful for everything you did, and yet she loved to serve. She stayed with, as long as Connie's mother lived, she stayed there, and she helped me to take care of her when Mama was sick. So I just have never known anyone that I thought was a greater servant to other people than was Aunt Beulah. And she loved the Lord and kept his sayings in her heart. I'm just going to briefly mention the name of this one lady. Her name is Joan Carroll. I don't have time to say much about her except this. She taught my children in Bible class in Cleveland when they were small. And when she was a wonderful lady. When we would ask them, who do you think the godliest woman is that you know? Always hoping they'd say, Mom. They always said Joan Carroll. And Joan truly is. She has a gentle and quiet spirit that the Lord loves. I saw her a few weeks ago, and I knew she wouldn't be here, so I told her that I had put her name in, I mean, I'd written a little bit about her in the book. And she said, "Me? I'm not great." And I said, "That's the wonderful thing about great people. They don't think they're great, is it? Great people never think they're great. If they did, they probably wouldn't be great." So that's all I'm going to say about Joan. There's another lady that I think is a great lady. And I think it's because she has a boy's name like I do. Her name is Billy Gibson. She's here. And she's probably embarrassed. But I don't really care because she is really a great lady. Billy has raised a family of, I can't read this, Billy. Is it six boys? No, four boys. And one lovely daughter. Her husband, Earl, was one of these people that wanted to know the truth. And she always encouraged him. And when the institutional battle was going on, he wanted to know who was right and who was wrong. And they lived in Newcomers Town, Ohio, where Billy still lives. And Earl would go with some of their family to Akron, where Connie was preaching, and study the problem with Connie. They did it several times. I don't even remember how many times. Their son David says he remembers going, but Earl wanted to know the truth, and he stood for the truth all of his life. He was right there beside him, encouraging him, teaching the children. They raised all the children, and she has two preachers. I think they can all preach if they want to. And one, as I said, one lovely daughter, Jane Verheller. Her husband is right. I think he's speaking right. No, he spoke yesterday. Billy helped Earl raise these children and stood beside him. When we were in meetings, no matter how far it was away from where they lived in Ohio, they would be there. We knew we could always count on seeing the Gibson family. And that's still true today. Whenever we're anywhere near that area, they're right there. Billy is also a very talented artist. I wish you could see some of her artwork. She paints china. She's given me some, and I love it. It's just beautiful. She has kept his sayings in her heart, and she truly is a great lady. I hope all of you can meet her. Maybe some of you know her. You know what, I forgot to say it, but in the beginning of this talk, it's amazing how many of the people I know in this audience. It's just wonderful to have been able to know so many of you and to see so many of you this week. It's been such a great week. Now I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Billy's daughter, Jane Verheller. Jane is amazing. She's lots of fun. She's talented. She's godly. We've been in their home so many times that and stayed there with them, so I feel like family. I know right where my bedroom is. And we have had so much fun together and done so many good things together. They have three daughters that are lovely and are bringing up their children. They're all Christians. They're bringing up their children to be faithful children, faithful to God. When we watched those girls grow up, when we first went there, they were just little bitty things. And each time we'd go back for a meeting, of course, they've grown. And I have to tell you that of all the kids that I've seen in all the families, they were the most godly teenagers I ever met. And it's because of the teaching they had from their godly mother and father. I do believe that Jane is one of the godliest women that I've known, and she does keep his sayings in her heart. I hope you get to meet her too. She's sitting right over here. This next lady I'm going to talk to you about is not here. She wouldn't be able to come if she, I'm sure she'd like to, but she's not able. It's Lucy Massey. She worships with us at Hebron Lane in Louisville. Lucy's a very sick lady, but she never misses a service of the Lord if she can possibly get out of bed. She had a stroke several years ago. She, by just determination, prayer, and hard work, she got over that stroke to a great extent. But she's never been really well since then. But she's the kind of person that just draws people to her. She comes in and sits down. She has to come in a wheelchair. But they kind of hide the wheelchair because she doesn't like it around. And when she is seated, there's a group of women around her like flies because they all want to talk to Lucy. And it's because she's so sweet and everybody loves her. And everybody kind of waits their turn to get to say hello to Lucy and get their hug. She's just a very special lady. I especially appreciate her because when Nana, Connie's first wife, most of you know that I'm Bobby too, when his first wife's mother was still living after Bobby died, and she lived with us part of the time, and she is in an apartment part of the time, but we did as much as we could to take care of her. And when we would be out of town, Lucy, who was still pretty healthy at that time, would take care of Nana. They would take her to the doctor. They would do so many things for her. In fact, that was kind of her second home when we weren't home. And I'll always love her and her husband for the care that they gave for Nana, because she kept his saying in her heart. That's why she's such a godly woman. The next one I'm going to talk about is Donna Halbrook. And I know she probably won't even speak to me again for this. But most of you know her probably. You know her husband, Ron. Donna is a truly great lady. I just barely got to know her a little bit when she was in school in Florida College with my daughter, Donna. And then I think the first or second, maybe the second meeting that we had after Connie and I were married, our honeymoon, we had two meetings. And the second one was at West Columbia, Texas, where Ron was preaching at that time. That's when I really got to know Donna a lot better. She is an amazing lady. Ron, as most of you know, spends an awful lot of time in traveling to the Philippines. He has done a tremendous amount of good over there. Nobody knows, unless they go to the Philippines, what it's like over there, and how wonderful the people are, how eager they are to hear the truth. And Ron can't resist going. And I can understand it. I'd go again too if Connie would let me, but he won't. But Donna is always there to support Ron. She packs his clothes. She makes his travel arrangements. She does everything for him that a wife could possibly do, and she supports him. I know sometimes people want to feel sorry for her because he goes so much. She doesn't have any self-pity. She stays plenty busy. She has five very small grandchildren, and she spends a whole lot of time helping take care of them. Two of them are twins, so she's had her hands full helping with it. But she's always there for them. I know that some have questioned whether it was good for Ron's children to be gone from home so much. They have three very faithful children. One, David's a preacher, and then they have a daughter and another son. But I heard Donna say, and I'm going to read her exactly what she said. She said, our children knew who their daddy was. So we need not worry about the children being neglected by their dad, because she says he wasn't. They weren't. And I know that she knows that. They have very fine Christian children. So he certainly hasn't neglected them, and she has not neglected supporting him. They have more people in their home than anyone I ever saw, and I don't know how in the world she does it. She always has the preachers in her home, and we have to fuss about it sometimes because we want to have them, and she says, no, I ask first. So she has people over for dinner constantly, and along with helping Ron and helping the babies and the children. Out-of-town visitors always have a place to stay. And I don't believe there's ever a visitor that comes to Hebron Lane. Somehow she doesn't manage to meet them and make them welcome and find out who they are and make them feel welcome. That is not always easy. We have several people there. And sometimes before I get to the back, they're gone. But somehow she manages to see them, meet them, and get acquainted with them. We all ought to be doing that. She's doing what all of us ought to be doing in every way. You know, when I think of women whose husbands do a lot of traveling, and women complain about it, if they're teaching and preaching the Lord's word, or the Lord's word, whatever you do, ladies, encourage him. Be there for him. Keep the home fires burning. The Lord's word needs to be taught. The world is lost, completely lost without the word. And we need, each one of us, need to forget about ourselves, have unselfish service, and encourage our husbands in that work. Donna is truly a great lady because she has kept the sayings of Jesus in her heart. The next lady, what time is it? It's time to quit, and I'm only half done. How many of you have to get go right now? I've got to talk to you about at least one more. I've got two or three more I wanted to talk to you about. I wish all of you could know Tessie Gumtalk. She lives in the Philippines. She lives in Tuguegarao. That's the name of the city. She stayed in our home, and I've stayed in her home at least twice for meetings. They raised six children, which are all faithful Christians. Some of them are married to Christians. She has it hard. I can't describe. There's not enough time to describe the way that the Filipinos live. When we were there for meetings, we were there, I can't remember, a week, I think. But sometimes they have two-week meetings. There was about 300 people attended. She and her sisters and her daughters do all the work in feeding that many people. And her kitchen doesn't look like yours and mine. Most of us wouldn't even know how to begin to cook and serve that many people, especially the way they have to do it. She works hard. Tessie works hard. But she's always full of fun. She sings while she's working. She's cheerful. She's always cheerful. At about, I think it's twice a year. I think I'm right about that. They have a preacher training class for about 25 men that stay there for 2 weeks. She and her daughters and her sisters prepare food for these men for three meals every day for 2 weeks. Never complains. She's always singing and laughing and always cheerful. And her husband gets some support from the States. But there's so many hungry people over there that they share everything that they get from the States with others. And they told me, Rhody, her husband Rhody, told me one time that when they get ready to eat a meal, almost always someone comes to their house hungry. And their children are trained to just take their plate and move to another room and give their place to the hungry. They've done such a good job in training. They not only raised 6 children that are faithful, but they also raised a niece. So they've really been busy and hardworking in the hardest of situations. I really love Tessie like a daughter, and she calls me Mom. So I guess we really are mother and daughter. She keeps his sayings in her heart, and I wish you could all meet Tessie. Do we have time for one more? I want to tell you about Connie Maraviglia Harbor. Connie was born out in West Texas somewhere. I don't remember where. My Connie teased her about how in the world she ever got a boy's name. But Connie is another great lady. She was married to Levy Maraviglia, who was a Filipino. And when they got married, they moved to the Philippines. She was tall, blonde, and fair-skinned. They're almost all short and dark and black hair. And when they start to get gray, it's still black. They dye it. You won't see many gray-haired Filipinos. But when she was over there, she's told me some of the funny things. I don't even remember them all. And I'm sure they weren't funny then, of the things, because she was such a curiosity. When she would shower, the showers in the Philippines are not like ours. Some of them are outside, and all they have is just a little stall around you, and your head's showing. So they would gather around to watch her take her shower. Those were the kind of things she had to live with. And, of course, now it's funny, but then it wasn't. They moved back to the States, and Levy was a very good doctor. We dearly loved him, but he died, I don't know how many years ago, a few years ago. Most of you may know David Maraviglia, who comes here. In fact, he was here yesterday. He is working on the Symphonia new songbook that we hope will be out soon. He preaches, I'll forget where it is, but anyway, I think it's in Missouri. Forgotten where it is. Then after Levy died, Connie married Bob Harbor, who had also been an elder along with Levy in the church in St. Louis. They had, of course, known each other for many years. And we had dinner with them about a year, maybe 2 years ago. Time goes by too fast. And he was suffering from cancer. And when you read your book, you'll find that I said he was still battling it. He has since died. And when we met with them, I found that Connie's memory was going bad. And David told me yesterday that they're taking her to his house to live, because she's no longer able to live by herself because of her memory, which makes me so sad, because she was such a great lady. She sacrificed a great deal. Her home. Oh, I have to tell you about this one thing. My daughter Kimberly, while Levy was still living, my daughter Kimberly moved to St. Louis when she was about 20. And she was still having a hard time. She just had been too long since she lost her dad, and she was having a hard time coping with that. They invited her to come and live with them. She lived with them about 8 or 9 months. They were so good to her. Connie was so good to her. she took her in like a daughter. She helped her with many things. She nursed her when she had her wisdom teeth all pulled. She helped her buy her wedding dress when I married Connie. They just treated her like a daughter. And I have to, some of you may not have the book, this is in the book, but I have to read it to you. When I told her that I was the subject matter of this class, she said, "Oh, Mom, please don't forget Connie Maravilla." I'm so sorry for that. There's so much more. And I'm going to have to quit because I know all of you have to go. Just read the book. Because I wanted to talk to you about Dr. Teresa, I never can say her name, from the Philippines, and also Shirley Bunting, who spent most of her life in Norway, helping both of them. Well, Teresa's just an amazing woman, and so is Shirley. But I guess I'll have to close it. So you've all been so good to listen, and I am so sorry I didn't get through it all, but I knew I couldn't. There wasn't any way, and there's many more great women that I couldn't. But ladies, we need to be doing what these women have done. Give yourself to service to the Lord and others. That's the way we're great. We're not great if we think about ourselves and ourselves alone. You young ladies who are married to preachers, Shirley Bunting spent a good 20 years or more of her life in a foreign country, far from her parents, her brothers and sisters, and she was as cheerful as anybody could possibly be. And I know young women who won't move to the next state if they have to leave their mama. And I know some of you grandmas who don't want them to leave because they take their grandchildren. Don't do that. Encourage the preaching of the gospel wherever it is, and encourage your husbands. Give your service. Be unselfish with your service. But whatever you do, keep His sayings in your heart. Thank you, all of you.